You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
You see our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, it's the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Brewers are winning 4-1 in this five-game, four-day series with the Chicago Cubs. A heartbreaker last night. Were you watching? I know I was. I thought that one was going to squeak through right at the bottom of the ninth. But the Brewers looking to be in good shape. I'll keep you posted. No outs. Again, bottom of the ninth. Brewers up 4-1, three outs away from logging up a W against the I-94 rivals, the Chicago Cubs. Of course, the Brewers bringing it back home in their next weekend homestand. We're going to have those free tickets because it's Friday tomorrow. So don't forget to tune in to all your favorite Civic Media hosts. We'll be giving away tickets all day. We'll give them away here on this fine program in the 4 o'clock hour. So be sure you've got that Civic Media app downloaded and ready to go for Free Ticket Friday tomorrow. I know I'm excited. I'm going to one of the games this weekend. It's going to be a good time. Good baseball weekend this weekend. I am very hopeful. Brewers facing off against the San Francisco Giants across this homecoming three-day Friday, Saturday, Sunday stand after they, I hope in short order, take care of the Cubs. We got a runner on first and one out. So two outs to go, folks. We will keep you posted. A bit more of breaking news before I tell you about our first great guest this afternoon. A federal judge ruled just within the last couple of hours that President Donald Trump's former criminal defense lawyer, and I'm going to put lawyer in air quotes, Alina Haba, has been unlawfully serving as the top federal prosecutor in New Jersey. The court saying the administration used a, quote, novel series of legal and personnel moves held that Haba's term as the interim U.S. attorney ended in July. And that the Trump administration's maneuvers to keep her in the post without getting confirmation from the U.S. Senate didn't follow the procedures required by federal law. Yeah, you think? I don't know. Here's what the judge wrote. Quote, faced with the question of whether Ms. Haba is lawfully performing the functions and duties of the Office of the United States Attorney for the District of New Jersey, I conclude she is not. I love it when judges actually speak the English. You know what I'm saying? Nice and plain. That we understand. That judge actually indicated without a request from the administration, he's putting his decision on hold to let appeals proceed. I think that's fairly wise because the appeal was guaranteed in this instance. This case challenging her continued status as some sort of, I don't know, interim or acting, who knows what she was in that role. It was brought by criminal defendants that she had charged, her office had charged, after she took over as interim U.S. attorney. But after that ostensible July cutoff date. So here's what's interesting about this case. A lot of federal courts, most of them who have not found in favor of challengers to Trump administration policies that are clearly illegal or unconstitutional, where those haven't been successful, it has nearly entirely been because the plaintiffs in those cases lacked standing. This case, in my opinion, is really interesting because ain't nobody that can argue that defendants, criminal defendants charged by the office that she was no longer in charge of, yeah, they clearly have standing, so that's not going to bounce this case out of the federal court. So watch this space. This will be an interesting one, especially since again, air quotes here, Attorney Haba didn't even know enough that you have to stand when a judge walks into the courtroom. This was back when she was still defending Donald Trump. Kind of an embarrassment. This woman, however, knows no shame nor anything that could embarrass her, as long as the lips are firmly attached to the Trump rump. Other breaking news this afternoon, Trump is expected to sign an executive order today that would direct the Justice Department to bring criminal charges against people who burn the American flag. Because that's our biggest problem as a country. Also, breaking news, Trump announcing earlier today that he will be joining police and FBI and potentially National Guards members while they are on patrol in Washington, D.C. tonight. I'm sure that'll make their jobs so much easier. I'm sure he'll really be a big value add. It's not just a photo opportunity, folks. It's, never mind. Also, very interestingly, today, Donald Trump, of course, had asked these other states to send their National Guards troops, and West Virginia, Ohio, and South Carolina are complying, because I'm sure every single one of the Guards people from South Carolina, Ohio, and West Virginia assumed they wouldn't be helping their fellow residents of the state that they live in response to a natural disaster. I'm sure they all signed up to travel to Washington, D.C. under a fake made-up emergency from a would-be tin pot dictator to what? I don't know, police their fellow citizens. Yeah, again, no, they didn't. And back here in local news, this one's an oddball bit of breaking news this afternoon. An English court has sentenced a West Dallas woman to 30 years in prison for her role in a bungled plot to kill a man with whom her online boyfriend had an ongoing beef. I'm sure this is coming to a Netflix documentary special near you sometime soon. It is a wild... She shot this guy or at him like five times, didn't kill him. He got away. She came back to his house, tried to shoot him. You cannot make this stuff up. It is the stuff for made-for-TV movies. I'm sure there'll be one. But yes, this West Dallas woman, Amy Betro, she'll be doing 30 in a British prison. Fascinating. Making West Dallas proud, Amy. Well done. And finally, again, here in local news, Governor Tony Evers says, implement the damn rules already. Governor Evers is telling state agencies not to wait for Republican-led legislative committees to sign off on a backlog of administrative rules governing topics ranging from wolf management to professional licensing. Some of these rules have been held up for years, but Evers is arguing to his department heads that a recent Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling last month cleared the way for him to give final approval to the proposals without getting a legislative committee's okay. Fascinating. I like Governor Evers when he's got a little spicy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're lame duck now, Tony. Spice it up. Get as spicy as you want to be. That is your breaking news this afternoon. Let me bring on my first guest. His name is Jack Eckbald. He is the 4th District Supervisor here in Milwaukee County. Friend of mine and now a friend of yours. Welcome to the show, Jack. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. And it's Eckblad.
Eckblad. I do this every time, Jack. I need it like tattooed on my head. I'm sorry.
You're good. It's an odd name because it looks like it shouldn't be pronounced the way it's written.
Yes.
So it's a genuine curveball.
Well, as someone who has had her last name mangled for decades, you have my fervent promise that I will endeavor to get it right going forward. Milwaukee County Supervisor Jack Eckblad, thanks so much for being here, Jack. Let's talk about housing. Everyone I talk to who is looking for housing, whether it's rental or their first house or a bigger house because they've got their second kid, everybody seems to be struggling over the price of housing. We have an affordability crisis. Of course, Donald Trump has done, nothing to help that at all whatsoever. Flag burning instead, top of mind for the Trump administration. Yeah. But you, your fellow supervisors, and the county executive and Milwaukee County's housing department have made great strides in this area. Tell us about something special that was included in the budget for 2026 and how it's going to impact Milwaukee County residents.
Yeah, so we're fighting for the budget in 2026 right now, and I'm really hoping that we're going to get flexible rental assistance for the unhoused. So for those of you listening who don't have a great geography for the Milwaukee County Board, can be forgiven. My district is right up against the lake. We go from the Port of Milwaukee south to the airport, and we actually had to find a way to remove two homeless encampments at Park and Rides last year. And, you know, the struggle for housing is so acute in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin. Milwaukee, I believe, ranks 11th as the tightest rental market in the state of in the country.
And it's gotten worse.
It's gotten worse.
Rents have gone up in the last couple of years. Yep.
Rents have gone up 30% statistically in Milwaukee. And actually, anecdotally, there's a lot of evidence that in places like Bayview and other places, it's gone up more like 40%. So rent is skyrocketing. And it's a supply issue as much as it is anything else. You are more likely to lose your job because you are unhoused than to become unhoused because you lost your job.
Right.
And there is an amazing team at Milwaukee County that does direct outreach to those who are unhoused. And the flexible rental assistance puts dollars in that team's hands so they can literally get people off the street, whether it's a hotel room, whether it's a voucher for housing, or making up the gap in your security deposit. It is just critical that we get these folks off the street and into housing. And whether you care about mental health, healthcare, child protective services, all of these go back to housing. It's at the core of everything we do. And I disagree that Donald Trump's done nothing. I think he's done worse than nothing. Because there has been a housing first policy that's been working in places, and he has defunded that. He's defunded keeping a roof over children's heads.
Folks, again, that's Jack Ekblad, Milwaukee County Supervisor. Jack, I brought this up, and I often on the show talk about that things that seem local actually are national. Things that seem national can be related to the local, that we're often looking at things that may appear disparate but are of a whole. And I spoke specifically about Milwaukee County's approach while I was still with the county, and so in very recent years, to unhoused folks that have set up encampments. And I drew a sharp distinction between the incredibly intentional, careful, and deliberate approach that the Milwaukee County Housing Department, in partnership with the Milwaukee County Board, has taken, where folks are given notice. Social workers are sent out, wraparound services are sent out, people are given resources. We establish emergency temporary housing. Their things aren't thrown out. I've tried to, and now, Jack, you're describing what the board and the county executive are hoping to get into this budget to provide further direct assistance to folks that are unhoused. Putting that in sharp relief against Donald Trump's approach, which is to direct people, to destruct people's tents, to take the very few personal possessions that they hold so dear that while unhoused, they carry these things around with them and simply put them into a dumpster and tell these people, go kick rocks, pound sand, whatever metaphor you want to use, you're not our problem anymore. This idea that some people in this country are throwaways is really abhorrent to me, Jack. And I want to talk about how we can address those things, stay true to progressive values, and yet build bridges to others within the Democratic Party and reopen the Democratic Party to conservatives of good faith as well. That's the challenge in 2026. We're going to discuss that challenge with Milwaukee County Board Supervisor Jack Ekblad. When we return, don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you are rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, it's a final score. Brewers besting the Cubs this afternoon 4-1. That final score just locked in. That puts the Brewers at 80 wins with 48 losses on the season and a whopping 7 games ahead of those dastardly Chicago Cubs. Cubs fans, you got your L flag? Why didn't you start flying that a little proudly? That was a wild series. 5 games, 4 days. Brewers took 2 of those 5. The other 3, good news for the Brewers, incredibly close outings for the most part with lots of bright spots coming from both Brewers defense and offense. If you missed my interview with Brewers Chief of Operations and President Rick Schlesinger yesterday, you can find that everywhere you find your favorite podcasts at and also at civicmedia.us/shows. Had a really nice time talking with Rick yesterday afternoon. We'll keep you posted on all Brewers updates here, as I am a wee bit of a baseball fanatic. Other breaking news this afternoon, President Donald Trump is now demanding the release of a former Colorado County elections official who was sentenced to prison last year after being found guilty of charges connected to sneaking someone into her office to search for evidence to try to prove Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was stolen. Posting on Truth Social today, Trump said, "Free Tina Peters, a brave and innocent patriot who has been tortured by crooked Colorado politicians." If he means indicted and prosecuted and convicted by a jury of her peers for something that was obviously completely illegal, which was evidenced by the fact that she tried to hide the person that she was sneaking in, he should feel bad that Tina Peters is in prison. She believed Donald Trump's lies about 2020 and it landed her in prison. These are state-based charges. Again, that's why he can't pardon her, because I'm pretty sure that would have been done alongside all those J6 pardons as well. Welcome back to the show, Jack Ekblad, Milwaukee County Board Supervisor. Jack, you and I have talked frequently about all manner of party dynamics. The Democratic Party, it seems to be on tilt, to borrow a phrase from pinball. Fundraising down, at least at the DNC level, party membership roles, folks not identifying as Democrats, as reported earlier this week, I believe, by the Washington Post. All of this in part revealing not just Democrats wondering how to respond to an election won by someone who is so fundamentally unfit to be even dog catcher. It stuns the mind and shocks the conscience. But how to bridge this, I don't know, sometimes it seems like a gulf within folks that may be amongst folks that may be inclined to support the Democratic Party, meaning the left or more progressive wing and some of the more centrist Democrats. And we need independent and swing voters, and I think some conservatives of good faith who know that Donald Trump ain't the guy that they want leading this country. How do we make this work in 2026, Jack? How do we bridge the gulf?
Well, you know, I come at this with a certain unique experience, Maggie. I became a political organizer 17 years ago in West Bend, Wisconsin, which is not the most Republican place. It's the most conservative place in the state of Wisconsin, arguably. And then went on to work on campaigns around the state in places like Beloit, where we got the first openly gay member of the Beloit City Council elected. I worked in Queens, but the parts of Queens, New York that voted for Trump, where Trump's actually from. And so our job was always to translate progressive policies and values to folks who never wanted the label. And frankly, that's what the progressive movement has always been about. And what we need now, I think, in the Democratic Party, there's a place for activists, but we really need organizers. And I think our challenge has been that we've been using those two terms interchangeably. And it's not to deride either one, but as an organizer, our job is to grow rooms, to build networks, not to hold a label over people, but to tell a story that expresses values in a way that makes room for people to get behind them. You know, we talked about housing. There isn't anyone of any political stripe other than the ultra wealthy who aren't dealing with housing issues right now. When we talk about healthcare, there's no one but the ultra wealthy who's not dealing with healthcare issues right now. And I think we have in the Democratic Party a really compelling story to tell. And I think people are hungry for positive, progressive values, even if we take out the progressive for the sake of the conversation.
Yeah, this is where I really think some care and attention needs to be placed, meaning engagement with people who may disagree with portions of a very progressive platform. That has to be a thing for Democrats and for any candidate that actually wants to win. You cannot litmus test your supporters or people that want to stand with you in that way. And I think that we've got, you know, as I look at the panoply of candidates that may be running for governor, I think to myself, good Lord, I hope the ones that are a little left of the dial don't engage in intra-party bloodshed in their zeal for these values that I think many even, I've never had a discussion with, or very rarely had a discussion with a super progressive lefty where the underlying value is at all disputed, or even perhaps the end result. I'm not, the folks that actually believe that police departments should be dismantled, I think are wing nuts and completely divorced from reality. But other than that—
Self-defeating rhetoric.
It really is. And like, you're not listening to the communities anyway, to communities. But I really think that we need to be much more willing to see the value in some of these other viewpoints. What do you want voters in Wisconsin, you got about 30 seconds, to be thinking about as we enter into 2026?
I want them to be thinking about their neighbors. I want them to be thinking about how we're present for our neighbors. And for anyone who's hesitant about incremental change, I would remind them that all change is incremental. Evolution first and foremost.
Folks, that is Jack Ekblad. Jack will be back soon to talk with me. We got to think the big thoughts together, Jack. He's a Milwaukee County Board Supervisor for District 4. Speaking of gubernatorial candidates, we review the field as it stands today with political editor Dan Schaefer next, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, folks. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Milwaukee County Board Supervisor Jack Ekblad of District 4. We'll have Jack back very soon. He's done organizing in a lot of different places, as he mentioned. And I love to talk with folks who spend their time perhaps over-perseverating about how do we bring Democrats together? How do we reach out and open ourselves up to conservatives of good faith, centrists of good faith, and independents and folks that don't particularly want to be involved in politics? And I can think of no better example of the spectrum of perspectives and viewpoints on very key platform issues than to take a look at the current field in the state of Wisconsin of declared or certainly, nearly, certainly, obviously, they're declaring, not maybe official yet, but they're in it to win it, field of Democratic primary contenders for the Wisconsin gubernatorial election in 2026. Here to talk with me about that and his prognostications and views of the field as it stands today is none other than Dan Schaefer, creator of the Recombobulation Area, and political editor here at Civic Media. Welcome back to the program, Dan. Lovely to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. Always a treat to join you here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Yes, I know sometimes it's a discombobulating name to say, the Recombobulation Area, but it's all good.
It's all of your many, many titles and talents, Dan. Let's jump in. You've got a piece that you just published, the way too early sort of accounting of who's who in the current state of play for the gubernatorial election in 2026. So give us the players and give us your thoughts on where things stand and kind of the spectrum, especially on the Democratic side. We've got folks very far left. We've got centrists, a lot of different backgrounds and viewpoints being reflected, at least on the Democratic side of the ticket.
Yeah, with Tony Evers deciding not to seek a third term, we're going to get the kind of inevitable big weird primary that has been looming on the Democratic side for a number of years now. So I think I went through the candidates who have declared, who are hinting at declaring, who are saying that they're going to declare, and all of this going forward, and identified what I, you know, first identified what I characterized as kind of a big four for the top four potential contenders, certainly including the people who have made it no secret that they are running. So that group being Attorney General Josh Call, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and State Senator Kelda Royce. So I think those four really made up, you know, the big four for potential contenders. And then once you get past that group, you know, it's some people who are question marks and whether they're running. So that's former WISDOMS Chair Ben Wickler, who has said he wants to run for a statewide race, but I don't know if this is going to be the time where he takes his shot. Mandela Barnes, the former Lieutenant Governor and 2022 candidate for U.S. Senate, whether he runs again for a statewide race, that's still unclear. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson has talked about potentially running. State Representative Francesca Hong made some news earlier this week, saying that she was looking into a potential run as well. So we've got quite a few candidates. And like you mentioned, it really does run the ideological spectrum among the big tent party that is the Democratic Party in Wisconsin.
Yeah, paint the spectrum for us. You know, just the names of the folks that are definitely in. I put, you know, Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez, County Executive Crowley, and AG Call sort of in the centrist, more moderate Democratic Party position. And I put State Senator Royce a bit more on the left or progressive end. Certainly State Representative Hong on the left, more progressive end, a self-identified Democratic socialist. And it's interesting. It's one thing when you run a state party, when we talk about Mr. Wickler, it's another to say, these are my policy platforms and here how I, this is how I am going to define myself to voters. Maybe Ben sort of looks like more of a centrist because he understands how we have to craft the messages. But it's very interesting. Chris Larson made some noises about maybe running. He, of course, would be on the more left end. Is that a fair placement of these folks, at least on the ideological left-leaning spectrum?
Yeah, I guess so. But I think, you know, part of this is that I think, you know, maybe a decade ago when we had the Bernie versus Hillary primary,
yes,
that progressive versus moderate divide was really more stark. I don't know if that divide is as stark in a Trump second term era as maybe it was before Trump was elected. You know, I'm looking at the candidacy of Rebecca Cook in the 3rd Congressional mm-hmm. District, where mm-hmm. she's campaigning with the Blue Dogs and attending these centrist conventions and also yep. campaigning with Bernie Sanders. And I think it is less now about finding the purity test of whatever precisely, you know, targeted ideological lane that it should be, but more about how do we rebuild the big tent of the Democratic Party? How do we invite more people in instead of having these purity tests that might kick people out? So I think it is about bringing, you know, kind of all corners together. And you mentioned, you know, Call, Rodriguez, and Crowley as potentially being more moderates. I think you could also view, you know, each of them in certain respects as people who could, you know, really bridge all corners mm-hmm. of the Democratic Party as well.
Yeah, it's why I you know, again, David Crowley, Milwaukee County, people that don't live in southeastern Wisconsin tend to think of it as blue. It's not. With the county as distinguishable from city of Milwaukee, there are deep, deep red pockets of Milwaukee County and communities. And I think David, as a county executive, has taken great pains to be a county executive that shows up for all of those communities. I feel like that has been a bit of Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez's brand, as well as the carefulness of Attorney General Josh Call. I think he has been very deliberate in selecting issues that he really gets out in front of and speaks to the press about, very carefully selected. It's interesting to me because when I think about those candidates, the ability to, I think, show up as an authentic human being becomes so critical for all of these candidates, because you're going to campaign in areas of the state where maybe a goodly number of people that might come see you might be disinclined to support you, but they're curious. And so being able to connect on a real basic level will be fascinating. And I agree with you, Dan. I don't see 2026 having the same inter-party fighting vibe as we did in the Dem primary for the president in 2016 with Hillary and Bernie. Certainly not. But what I think is really fascinating is that the MAGA movement itself will basically take the most extreme left position on a topic that they think is motivating for voters and paint every single Democratic candidate with the most extreme position ever articulated by any Democrat ever, right? And so they create effectively a straw man. How do you rate sort of the communication, the messaging skills of some of these top contenders on the Democratic side? Because I think, and of course that, you know, deals with their teams and all of that, but at base, it's a person that's got to get out there and convince people that they're the real deal and that they can see themselves and see their own values reflected in that candidate. How do you rate the ability of these top contenders to sort of rebut the rhetorical proposition from MAGA that they use frequently, which is effectively a straw man?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's a challenge, I think, from, you know, candidate to candidate. And it's about, I think you touched on it a little bit there. It's responding it to an in an authentic way. I think Tony Evers has been successful in this regard because he has, you know, I think he even said it in his 2022 victory speech, boring wins in Wisconsin. And he responded to all of these ridiculous attacks by just kind of dismissing them and not really playing them up. And it's just like not, you know, not making it a huge fight and kind of letting it roll off his back a little bit. And then I think, too, you know, you look at Mandela Barnes in 2022. I think he tried to really respond to a lot of it to kind of varying degrees of success. So I think each of the candidates, and I think part of the reason I, you know, wrote the piece that I did earlier this summer that it was a good time for Tony Evers to step aside is because I think this is a really strong bench. Like, I think, you know, the top four candidates that I mentioned, I think could each win the race for governor in this state. And but I think part of it, and you touched on it a little bit too, is that the initial list leans really heavy on candidates from Milwaukee and Madison.
Right.
And so you have Kelda Royce, who's the state senator representing Madison. You have David Crowley, who's representing Milwaukee County. And so what are their name IDs going to look like
outstate,
in places
yeah.
like Green Bay and the Fox Valley, places like La Crosse and Eau Claire that are really important cities for the statewide count for Democrats in Wisconsin? And so I think, you know, going in the outset, I think I would probably make Josh Call the favorite, you know, or the front runner if he, you know, declares at the outset, just because of the fact that he has won two statewide races. Mm-hmm. Again, he's not the flashiest guy as attorney general, but at the same time, you win two statewide races, you probably walk into a crowded primary as the favorite. And so I think that would be certainly a factor. How Crowley, Royce, you know, would introduce themselves to a statewide audience. I think Rodriguez has been doing that, you know, in her time as lieutenant governor,
yep.
really touring
slowly
the state,
but surely,
connecting
yep.
with people touring the state. And you know, she's from Waukesha County. So it's, you know, more of a county that's becoming it's a historically red county that's becoming more and more purple
yes.
every year. And I think her, you know, ascent as lieutenant governor is indicative of really some of the changing demographics in and around the suburbs. So I think it's going to be important to see, once this campaign really takes shape and people are introducing themselves to voters, how people respond. And I think, for one example, you know, David Crowley in particular, I think he is an extraordinarily strong retail politician. He's a very
yes.
authentic person. I held an event with him a couple of years ago at Anodyne Coffee in Milwaukee, where we did a live podcast. And before he took the stage, he went around and introduced himself to every single person in that building and was cracking jokes and having fun with people. And so I think, you know, for people who might not know David Crowley, just as one example,
get him in a room.
He's going to win you over.
Yeah.
You know, so
there is no question that County Executive Crowley is one of the most naturally gifted politicians that I have ever met. And I've met a couple presidents and a couple presidential candidates. He just has the thing, which is like, hey, give me 5 minutes. I just want, let's talk about, you know, what's going on with your family. He's that guy who can have those conversations. And I think it is just, again, a transformational kind of politician. He's so real, and he has a natural sense of humor, a way of connecting with people. And he also has an absolutely acute grasp of issues. He can respond and understand and integrate new information. He's great thinking on his feet, and he really has a genuine curiosity about policy and the details behind how you effectuate policy. And I love watching wonky folks who are also incredibly charismatic be able to communicate that to people who may be considering voting for them.
It's a real skill.
It's a real skill.
Yeah.
You know it when they don't have it. And then when you feel it and see it, it's like, ooh, there's the secret sauce. Don't go anywhere. Dan's sticking around. So are you. We're going to talk about the George Webb Burger giveaway and maybe a little bit about Democrats.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's always a good time for Mary J. Blige and political editor and recombobulation creator Dan Schaefer with me for the rest of this half hour. We've got another Dan coming up at top of the hour. We'll be joined by D.C. Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges. He's joining us in his personal capacity, but we'll get his thoughts on Trump's D.C. police takeover. Is it really a takeover? I don't know what's happening. I'm sure Dan can help enlighten us as to whether or not having a president tagging along with police officers makes their job easier or harder. We're going to have that discussion next, starting at 5 o'clock. Don't go anywhere. But right now, still with my good friend Dan Schaefer. Dan, you went out, got yourself a free George Webb burger. What was the vibe like? Which George Webb were you at yesterday? I'm sure people were enjoying the moment.
Sure did. As like any proud Milwaukeean, I went to enjoy my free hamburger at George Webb's. I live on the west side of town, so I went over to the closest one to me in downtown West Allis on Greenfield Avenue between 72nd and 73rd Street. Got there at about 4:30 yesterday, and even though the promotion started at 2, the line was basically the full city block there.
No kidding.
In West Allis. So it was a busy time, lots of excitement, lots of people taking pictures and having fun and talking about the Brewers and the line and all of that. So made the line moved really quick. The people working at, shout out to the people working at George Webb's yesterday. My goodness,
for real.
What a day they must have had. I hope everybody tipped their waitstaff well.
Yes.
Went through the line. It only took me about 15 minutes to get the way through, and went there and enjoyed my hamburger just as I did in 2018. So now I've had two opportunities to do this with 12 game winning streaks for our beloved Milwaukee Brewers. It was a wonderful time.
And 180,000 of those free hamburgers given away by George Webb yesterday. We happily had Brewers Chief of Operations and President Rick Schlesinger on the show yesterday afternoon. Such a great day. Brewers chalking up a win this afternoon. I didn't get to the burgers in 2018. And of course, I was prepping my show and then doing my show. It couldn't have been at a worse time yesterday. But I was there back in 87 eating a free burger. I think I spent a couple hours in line back then with a couple of my buddies. Anybody that you saw not eating their burger, but like they're going to take it with them and like preserve it for posterity's sake. Some guy back, I think in 87, had his bronzed. I mean, people get nuts about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think my friends over at Milwaukee Record did something with that where they like preserved their burger since 2018 or something like that. Yeah, it's a whole thing. I saw some people like leaving with their burger heading out, but I wasn't quite sure about that. But, you know, it's a great week to be a Brewers fan right now. You know, you had the George Webb giveaway, and then on this upcoming Sunday, you've got the big Bob Uecker celebration that's happening that I was lucky to snag a ticket to before they got sold out. So I'm looking forward to really a Milwaukee Brewers week for the ages here with the George Webb's giveaway, with the Uecker celebration of his life. It's
endless,
a great time to
summer,
be a Brewers fan.
Right? Endless Brewers fun. I, too, am going to be at the game on Sunday. Maybe I'll see you there, Dan. It's just something wonderful to be a part of and to feel that excitement. Baseball continues to feel for me in Milwaukee and in the state of Wisconsin something that is so directly reflective of our community as a state and in southeastern Wisconsin. It remains, and the Brewers franchise has done an incredible job to retain the affordability of being able to attend a game. I go with my dad frequently. Our shtick is still, we're parking on Blue Mound and walking in because we're Milwaukeeans and we don't pay for parking. Don't care. We'll walk just to not pay for parking. And these elements about the Brewers, it feels like a team that is deeply connected and reflective of the community in which they play, both southeastern Wisconsin and more broadly. Do you have some favorite Brewers moments in your memory bank, Dan?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Well, when I was a kid, I was at Robin Yount's 3,000th hit. I was at the game 1992 when I was just about 7 years old. My dad took me to the ballpark, and I was about to fall asleep in the stands, and he just kind of said he was like, "All right, stick around one more inning. Yount's up next inning, and then we'll see if we're able to see the hit." And sure enough, he base hit the right field that very next inning. So the excitement carried us through the rest of the game.
I'm sure it did.
Sure.
That's a real special moment to see those huge milestones. Dan, you were dozing off at the games when you were seven. Every once in a while in the seventh inning, you might catch me dozing off. That's like the perfect time before all the wiener races or the sausage race.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sausage races. I have a wiener dog and I take her to wiener dog races. So that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, sometimes I can doze off in a seventh inning. It's just, if it's a, you know, smaller crowd, lazier game, just the right amount of shade, the beautiful background noise of a Brewers game. I'll hit you up if I'm out in the ballpark wandering around on Sunday, Dan. It'd be great to see you and some of our
absolutely.
Listeners out and about. If you see Dan or I, say hello. We'd love to hear from you. Dan, one of the things I wanted to close up here with, we'll have about a minute, is the fundraising and party membership news that has been coming out this week about the Democratic Party. I'm going to give everybody my take. This is not a time to freak out. There are fluctuations. We lost an election. This is what happens. What has been your reaction to this? I think this is a bit of much ado about nothing. We need attention to it, right? But I think it's a little overhyped.
I appreciate you saying that it's a little overhyped because I think you're right. The Democrats are prone to freaking out over any bit of news that comes across like the Politico and New York Times of the world. But I do think there's some cause for concern here because I think the party has just not yet righted the ship.
Yes.
And I think we're seeing that in a number of ways. And, you know, especially when you see the RNC massively outfunding the DNC,
right.
You do wonder if it would have been better off with Ben Wickler at the helm there.
Well,
that's
a discussion we'll have next week with Dan. It's that relationship between donors and the chair and those interpersonal dynamics. That's what I think we're seeing right now. Folks, hang on. We've got DC Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges joining us next. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.